suppose, groaned Lissa. You kind of left out that part in your recap. Why'd you say that to her? Because it's probably true. But you had to know it upset her. Why do you keep provoking her? Why can't you just make peace with her? I sat upright. Make peace with her? She gave me a black eye, probably on purpose. How do I make peace with someone like that? Lissa just shook her head and walked over to the mirror to check her makeup. The feelings coming through our bond were ones of frustration and exasperation. Lingering in the back was a bit of anticipation, too. I had the patience to examine her carefully, now that I'd finished my venting. She had on a silky lavender shirt and a knee-length black skirt. Her long hair had the kind of smooth perfection only achieved by spending an hour of your life on it with a hairdryer and flat iron. You look nice. What's up? Her feelings shifted slightly, her irritation with me dimming a little. I'm meeting Christian soon. For a few minutes there, it had felt like the old days with Lissa and me. Just us, hanging out and talking. Her mention of Christian, as well as the realization that she'd have to leave me soon for him, stirred up dark feelings in my chest. Feelings I had to reluctantly admit were jealousy. Naturally, I didn't let on to that. Wow, what'd he do to deserve that? Rescue orphans from a burning building? If so, you might want to make sure he didn't set the building on fire in the first place. Christian's element was fire. It was fitting since it was the most destructive one. Laughing, she turned from the mirror and noticed me gently touching my swollen face with my fingers. Her smile turned kind. It doesn't look that bad. Whatever. I can tell when you're lying, you know. And Dr. Olensky says it'd be even worse tomorrow. I lay back down on the bed. There probably isn't enough concealer in the world to cover this, is there? Tasha and I'll have to invest in some Phantom of the Opera-style masks. She sighed and sat on the bed near me. Too bad I can't just heal it. I smiled. That would be nice. The compulsion and charisma brought on by Spirit were great, but really, healing was her coolest ability. The range of things she could achieve was staggering. Lissa was also thinking about what Spirit could do. I wish there was some other way to control the Spirit, in a way that still let me use the magic. Yeah, I said. I understood her burning desire to do great things and help people. It radiated off of her. Hell, I would have also liked to have this eye cleared up in an instant rather than days. I wish there were, too. She sighed again. And there's more to me than just wishing I could heal and do other stuff with Spirit. I also, well, just miss the magic. It's still there. It's just blocked off by the pills. It's burning inside of me. It wants me, and I want it. But there's a wall between us. You just can't imagine it. I can, actually. It was true. Along with having a general sense for her feelings, I could sometimes also slip into her. It was hard to explain and even harder to endure. When that happened, I could literally see through her eyes and feel what she experienced. During those times, I was her. Many times, I'd been in her head while she longed for the magic, and I'd felt the burning need she spoke of. She often woke up at night, yearning for the power she could no longer reach. Oh, yeah, she said ruefully. I forget about that sometimes. A sense of bitterness filled her. It wasn't directed at me so much as it was the no-win nature of her situation. Anger sparked inside of her. She didn't like feeling helpless any more than I did. The anger and frustration intensified into something darker and uglier, something I didn't like. Hey, I said, touching her arm. You okay? She closed her eyes briefly, then opened them. I just hate it. The intensity of her feelings reminded me of our conversation, the one we'd had just before I went to the Badika house. You still feel like the pills might be weakening? I don't know. A little. Is it getting worse? She shook her head. No, I still can't use the magic. I feel closer to it, but it's still blocked off. But you still... your moods... Yeah. They're acting up. But don't worry, she said, seeing my face. I'm not seeing things or trying to hurt myself. Good. I was glad to hear it, but still worried. Even if she still couldn't touch the magic, I didn't like the idea of her mental state slipping again. Desperately, I hoped the situation would stabilize on its own. I'm here, I told her softly, holding her gaze. If anything happens that's weird, you tell me, okay? Like that, the dark feelings disappeared within her. As they did, I felt a weird ripple in the bond. I can't explain what it was, but I shuddered from the force. Lissa didn't notice. Her mood perked up again, and she smiled at me.
Thanks, she said. I will.
I smiled, happy to see her back to normal. We lapsed into silence, and for the briefest of moments, I wanted to pour my heart out to her. I'd had so much on my mind lately. My mother, Dimitri, and the Badika house. I'd been keeping those feelings locked up, and they were tearing me apart. Now, feeling so comfortable with Lissa for the first time in a long time, I finally felt that I could let her into my feelings for a change. Before I could open my mouth, I felt her thoughts suddenly shift. They became eager and nervous. She had something she wanted to tell me, something she'd been thinking about intently. So much for pouring my heart out. If she wanted to talk, I wouldn't burden her with my problems. So I pushed them aside and waited for her to speak.
I found something in my research with Miss Carmack. Something strange.
Oh? I asked, instantly curious. Moroi usually developed their specialized element during adolescence. After that, they were put into magic classes specific to that element. But as the only spirit user on record at the moment, Lissa didn't really have a class she could join. Most people believe she just hadn't specialized. But she and Miss Carmack, the magic teacher at St. Vladimir's, had been meeting independently to learn what they could about spirit. They researched both current and old records, checking for clues that might lead to other spirit users, now that they knew some of the telltale signs, an inability to specialize, mental instability, etc. I didn't find any confirmed spirit users, but I did find reports of, unexplained phenomena. I blinked in surprise. What kind of stuff? I asked, pondering what would count as unexplained phenomena for vampires. When she and I had lived with humans, we would have been considered unexplained phenomena. They're scattered reports, but, like, I read this one about a guy who could make others see things that weren't there. He could get them to believe they were seeing monsters or other people or whatever. That could be compulsion. Really powerful compulsion. I couldn't do that, and I'm stronger, or used to be, in it than anyone we know. And that power comes from using spirit. So, I finished, you think this illusion guy must have been a spirit user, too? She nodded. Why not contact him and find out?
Because there's no information listed. It's secret. And there are others just as strange, like someone who could physically drain others.
People standing nearby would get weak and lose all their strength. They'd pass out. And there was someone else who could stop things in mid-air when they were thrown at him. Excitement lit up her features. He could have been an air user, I pointed out. Maybe, she said. I could feel the curiosity and excitement swirling through her. She desperately wanted to believe there were others out there like her. I smiled. Who knew? Moroi have Roswell? And Area 51 type stuff. It's a wonder I'm not being studied somewhere to see if they can figure out the bond. Lissa's speculative mood turned teasing. I wish I could see into your mind sometimes. I'd like to know how you feel about Mason. He's my friend, I said stoutly, surprised at the abrupt change in subject. That's it. She tisked. You used to flirt. And do other stuff. With any guy you could get your hands on. Hey, I said, offended. I wasn't that bad. Okay, maybe not, but you don't seem interested in guys anymore. I was interested in guys. Well, one guy. Mason's really nice, she continued, and crazy about you. He is, I agreed. I thought about Mason, about that brief moment when I thought he was sexy outside Stan's class. Plus, Mason was really funny, and we got along beautifully. He wasn't a bad prospect as far as boyfriends went. You guys are a lot alike. You're both doing things you shouldn't. I laughed. That was also true. I recalled Mason's eagerness to take on every Strigoi in the world.
I might not be ready for that, despite my outburst in the car, but I shared some of his recklessness. It might be time to give him a shot, I thought. Bantering with him was fun, and it had been a long time since I'd kissed anyone. Dimitri made my heart ache, but, well, it wasn't like anything else was going on there. Lissa watched me appraisingly, like she knew what I was thinking. Well, aside from the Dimitri stuff. I heard Meredith say you were an idiot for not going out with him. She said it's because you think you're too good for him.
What? That's not true.
Hey, I didn't say it. Anyway, she said she's thinking of going after him.
Mason and Meredith? I scoffed. That's a disaster in the making. They have nothing in common.
It was petty, but I'd gotten used to Mason always doting on me. Suddenly, the thought of someone else getting him irked me.
You're possessive, Lissa said, again guessing my thoughts. No wonder she got so annoyed at me reading her mind. Only a little.
She laughed. Rose, even if it's not Mason, you really should start dating again. There are lots of guys who would kill to go out with you, guys who are actually nice.
I hadn't always made the best choices when it came to men. Once again, the urge to spill all my worries to her seized me. I'd been hesitant to tell her about Dimitri for so long, even though the secret burned inside of me. Sitting with her here reminded me that she was my best friend. I could tell her anything and she wouldn't judge me. But, just like earlier, I lost the chance to tell her what was on my mind. She glanced over at her alarm clock and suddenly sprang up from the bed.
I'm late. I've got to meet Christian.
Joy filled her, underscored with a bit of nervous anticipation. Love. What could you do? I swallowed back the jealousy that started to raise its ugly head. Once again, Christian had taken her away from me. I wasn't going to be able to unburden myself tonight. Lissa and I left the dorm, and she practically sprinted away, promising we'd talk tomorrow. I wandered back to my own dorm. When I got to my room, I passed by my mirror and groaned when I saw my face. Dark purple surrounded my eye. In talking to Lissa, I'd almost forgotten about the whole incident with my mother. Stopping to get a closer look, I stared at my face. Maybe it was egotistical, but I knew I looked good. I wore a C-cup and had a body much coveted in a school where most of the girls were supermodel slim. And as I'd noted earlier, my face was pretty too. On a typical day, I was a 9 around here. 10 on a very good one. But today? Yeah, I was practically in negative numbers. I was going to look fabulous for the ski trip. My mom beat me up, I informed my reflection. It looked back sympathetically. With a sigh, I decided I might as well get ready for bed. There was nothing else I wanted to do tonight, and maybe extra sleep would speed the healing. I went down the hall to the bathroom to wash my face and brush my hair. When I got back to my room, I slipped on my favorite pajamas, and the feel of the soft flannel cheered me up a little. I was packing my backpack for the next day when a burst of emotion abruptly shot through my bond with Lissa. It caught me unaware and gave me no chance to fight it. It was like being knocked over by a hurricane-force wind, and suddenly, I was no longer looking at my backpack. I was inside Lissa, experiencing her world firsthand. And that's when things got awkward, because Lissa was with Christian, and things were getting hot. Chapter 8. Christian was kissing her, and wow, was it a kiss. He wasn't messing around. It was the kind of kiss that small children shouldn't be allowed to see. Hell, it was the kind of kiss no one should be allowed to see, let alone experience through a psychic link. As I've noted before, strong emotion from Lissa could make this phenomenon happen, the one where I got pulled inside her head. But always, always it was because of some negative emotion. She'd get upset or angry or depressed, and that would reach out to me. But this time, she wasn't upset. She was happy. Very, very happy. Oh, man, I needed to get out of here. They were up in the attic of the school's chapel, or, as I'd like to call it, their love nest. The place had been a regular hangout for them, back when each of them was feeling antisocial and wanted to escape. Eventually, They'd decided to be antisocial together, and one thing had led to another. Since they started publicly dating, I hadn't known they spent much time here anymore. Maybe they were back for old time's sake. And indeed, a celebration did seem to be going on. Little scented candles were set up around the dusty old place, candles that filled the air with the scent of lilacs. I would have been a little nervous about setting all those candles in a confined space, filled with flammable boxes and books, but Christian probably figured he could control any accidental infernos. They finally broke that insanely long kiss and pulled back to look at each other. They lay on their sides on the floor. Several blankets had been spread under them. Christian's face was open and tender as he regarded Lissa, his pale blue eyes aglow with some inner emotion. It was different from the way Mason regarded me. There was certainly adoration with him, but Mason's was a lot like when you walk into a church and fall to your knees in awe and fear of something you worship but don't really understand. Christian clearly worshipped Lissa, in his way, but there was a knowing glint to his eyes, a sense that the two of them shared an understanding of each other so perfect and powerful that they didn't even need words to convey it.
"Don't you think we are going to go to hell for this?" asked Lissa.
He reached out and touched her face, trailing his fingers along her cheek and neck and down to the top of her silky shirt. She breathed heavily at that touch, at the way it could be so gentle and small, yet evoke such a strong passion within her.
"For this?"
He played with the shirt's edge, letting his finger just barely brush inside of it.
"No," she laughed. "For this."
She gestured around the attic.
"This is a church. We shouldn't be doing this kind of,
thing up here."
"Not true,"
he argued. Gently, he pushed her onto her back and leaned over her.
"The church is downstairs. This is just storage. God won't mind."
"You don't believe in God," she chastised. Her hands made their way down his chest. Her movements were as light and deliberate as his, yet they clearly triggered the same powerful response in him. He sighed happily as her hand slid under his shirt and up his stomach.
"I'm humoring you."
"You'd say anything right now," she accused. Her fingers caught the edge of his shirt and pushed it up. He shifted so she could push it all the way off him and then leaned back over her, bare-chested.
"You're right,"
he agreed. He carefully undid one button on her blouse, just one. Then he again leaned down and gave her one of those hard, deep kisses. When he came up for air, he continued on as though nothing had happened.
"Tell me what you need to hear, and I'll say it."
He unfastened another button. "There's nothing I need to hear," she laughed. Another button popped free.
"You can tell me whatever you want. It'd just be nice if it were true."
"The truth, huh? No one wants to hear the truth. The truth is never sexy. But you?"
The last button came undone, and he spread her shirt away.
"You are too goddamn sexy to be real."
His words held his trademark snarky tone, but his eyes conveyed a different message entirely. I was witnessing this scene through Lissa's eyes, but I could imagine what he saw. Her smooth white skin, slender waist and hips, a lacy white bra. Through her, I could feel that the lace was itchy, but she didn't care. Feelings both fond and hungry spread over his features. From within Lissa, I could feel her heart race and breathing quicken. Emotions similar to Christian's clouded all other coherent thoughts. Shifting down, he lay on top of her, pressing their bodies together. His mouth sought hers out again, and as their lips and tongues made contact, I knew I had to get out of there. Because I understood it now. I understood why Lissa had dressed up and why the love nest had been decked out like a Yankee Candle showroom. This was it. The moment. After a month of dating, they were going to have sex. Lissa, I knew, had done it before with a past boyfriend. I didn't know Christian's past, but I sincerely doubted many girls had fallen prey to his abrasive charm. but in feeling what Lissa felt, I could tell that none of that mattered. Not in that moment. In that moment, there were only the two of them, and the way they felt about each other right now. And in a life filled with more worries than someone her age should have had, Lissa felt absolutely certain about what she was doing now. It was what she wanted, what she'd wanted for a very long time with him. And I had no right to be witnessing it. Who was I kidding? I didn't want to witness it. I took no pleasure in watching other people get it on, and I sure as hell didn't want to experience sex with Christian. It'd be like losing my virginity, virtually. But Jesus Christ, Lissa wasn't making it easy to get out of her head. She had no desire to detach from her feelings and emotions, and the stronger they grew, the stronger they held me. Trying to distance myself from her, I focused my energies on coming back to myself, concentrating as hard as I could. More clothes disappeared. "Come on, come on," I told myself sternly. The condom came out. Yikes. "You're your own person, Rose. Get back in your head." Their limbs intertwined, their bodies moving together. Son of a... I ripped out of her and back to myself. Once again, I was back in my room, but I no longer had any interest in packing my backpack. My whole world was askew. I felt strange and violated, almost unsure if I was Rose or if I was Lissa. I also felt that resentment toward Christian again. I certainly didn't want to have sex with Lissa, but there was that same pang inside of me, that frustrated feeling that I was no longer the center of her world. Leaving the backpack untouched, I went right to bed, wrapping my arms around myself and curling into a ball to try to squelch the ache within my chest. I fell asleep pretty quickly and woke up early as a result. Usually, I had to be dragged out of bed to go meet Dimitri, but today, I showed up early enough that I actually beat him to the gym. As I waited, I saw Mason cutting across to one of the buildings that held classrooms. "Whoa," I called. "Since when are you up this early?"
"Since I had to retake a math test," he said, walking over to me.
He gave me his mischievous smile.
"Might be worth skipping, though, to hang out with you."
I laughed, remembering my conversation with Lissa. Yes, there were definitely worse things I can do than flirt and start something with Mason.
"Nah, you might get in trouble. Then I'd have no real challenge on the slopes."
He rolled his eyes, still smiling.
"I'm the one with no real challenge, remember?"
"You ready to bet on something yet? Or are you still too afraid?"
"Watch it,"
he warned.
"Or I might take back your Christmas present."
"You got me a present? I hadn't expected that."
"Yep. But if you keep backtalking, I might give it to someone else."
"Like Meredith?" I teased.
"She isn't even in your league, and you know it."
"Even with a black eye?" I asked with a grimace.
"Even with two black eyes."
The look he gave me just then wasn't teasing or even really suggestive. It was just nice. Nice, friendly, and interested. Like he really cared. After all the stress lately, I decided I liked being cared about. And with the neglect I was starting to feel from Lissa, I realized I also kind of liked having someone who wanted to pay so much attention to me. "What are you doing on Christmas?" I asked. He shrugged.
"Nothing. My mom almost came down, but had to cancel at the last minute. You know, with everything that happened."
Mason's mother wasn't a guardian. She was a dampier, who'd chosen to just be domestic and have kids. As a result, I knew he saw her quite a bit. It was ironic, I thought, that my mom actually was here, but for all intents and purposes, she might as well have been somewhere else. "Come hang with me," I said on impulse. "I'll be with Lissa and Christian and his aunt. It'll be fun."
"Really?"
"Very fun."
"That's not what I was asking about."
I grinned. "I know. Just be there, okay?" He swept me one of the gallant bows he liked to make.
"Absolutely."
Mason wandered off just as Dimitri showed up for our practice. Talking to Mason had made me feel giddy and happy. I hadn't thought about my face at all with him. But with Dimitri, I suddenly became self-conscious. I didn't want to be anything less than perfect with him. And as we walked inside, I went out of my way to avert my face so he couldn't look at me full on. Worrying about that brought my mood down. And as it plummeted, all the other things that had been upsetting me came tumbling back. We returned to the training room with the dummies, and he told me he simply wanted me to practice the maneuvers from 2 days ago. Happy he wasn't going to bring up the fight, I set to my task with a burning zeal, showing the dummies just what would happen if they messed with Rose Hathaway. I knew my fighting fury was fired up by more than just a simple desire to do well. My feelings were out of control this morning, raw and intense after both the fight with my mother and what I'd witnessed with Lissa and Christian last night. Dimitri sat back and watched me, occasionally critiquing my technique and offering suggestions for new tactics.
"Your hair's in the way," he said at one point. "Not only are you blocking your peripheral vision, you're running the risk of letting your enemy get a handhold."
"If I'm actually in a fight, I'll wear it up," I grunted as I shoved the stake neatly up between the dummy's ribs. I didn't know what these artificial bones were made of, but they were a bitch to work around. I thought about my mom again and added a little extra force to the jab. "I'm just wearing it down today, that's all."
"Rose," he said warningly.
Ignoring him, I plunged again. His voice came more sharply the next time he spoke.
"Rose, stop."
I backed away from the dummy, surprised to find my breathing labored. I hadn't realized I was working that hard. My back hit the wall. With nowhere to go, I looked away from him, directing my eyes toward the ground.
"Look at me," he ordered.
"Dimitri."
"Look at me."
No matter our close history, he was still my instructor. I couldn't refuse a direct order. Slowly, reluctantly, I turned toward him, still tilting my head slightly down so the hair hung over the sides of my face. Rising from his chair, he walked over and stood before me. I avoided his eyes, but saw his hand move forward to brush back my hair. Then it stopped, as did my breathing. Our short-lived attraction had been filled with questions and reservations, but one thing I'd known for sure, Dimitri had loved my hair. Maybe he still loved it. It was great hair, I'll admit. Long and silky and dark. He used to find excuses to touch it, and he'd counseled me against cutting it, as so many female guardians did. His hand hovered there, and the world stood still as I waited to see what he would do. After what seemed like an eternity, he let his hand gradually fall back to his side. Burning disappointment washed over me, yet at the same time, I'd learned something. He'd hesitated. He'd been afraid to touch me, which maybe, just maybe, meant he still wanted to. He'd had to hold himself back. I slowly tipped my head back so that we made eye contact. Most of my hair fell back from my face, but not all. His hand trembled again, and I hoped again he'd reach forward. The hand steadied. My excitement dimmed.
"Does it hurt?"
he asked. The scent of that aftershave, mingled with his sweat, washed over me. God, I wish he had touched me. "No," I lied.
"It doesn't look so bad,"
he told me.
"It'll heal."
"I hate her," I said, astonished at just how much venom those three words held. Even while suddenly turned on and wanting Dimitri, I still couldn't drop the grudge I held against my mother.
"No, you don't,"
he said gently.
"I do." "You don't have time to hate anyone," he advised, his voice still kind.
"Not in our profession.
You should make peace with her."
Lissa had said exactly the same thing. Outrage joined my other emotions. The darkness within me stirred to unfurl. "Make peace with her? After she gave me a black eye on purpose? Why am I the only one who sees how crazy this is?"
"She absolutely did not do it on purpose," he said, voice hard. "No matter how much you resent her, you have to believe that. She wouldn't do that. And anyway, I saw her later that day. She was worried about you.
Probably more worried someone will bring her up on child abuse charges, I grumbled.
Don't you think this is the time of year for forgiveness?
I sighed loudly. This isn't a Christmas special. This is my life. In the real world, miracles and goodness just don't happen. He was still eyeing me calmly.
In the real world, you can make your own miracles.
My frustration suddenly hit a breaking point, and I gave up trying to maintain my control. I was so tired of being told reasonable, practical things whenever something went wrong in my life. Somewhere in me, I knew Dimitri only wanted to help, but I just wasn't up for the well-meant words. I wanted comfort for my problems. I didn't want to think about what would make me a better person. I wished he'd just hold me and tell me not to worry. Okay, can you just stop this for once? I demanded, hands on my hips.
Stop what?
The whole profound Zen crap thing. You don't talk to me like a real person. Everything you say is just some wise life lesson nonsense. You really do sound like a Christmas special. I knew it wasn't entirely fair to take my anger out on him, but I found myself practically shouting. I swear, sometimes it's just like you want to hear yourself talk. And I know you're not always this way. You're perfectly normal when you talk to Tasha, but with me? You're just going through the motions. You don't care about me. You're just stuck in your stupid mentor role. He stared at me, uncharacteristically surprised.
I don't care about you?
No. I was being petty. Very, very petty. And I knew the truth, that he did care, and was more than just a mentor. I couldn't help myself, though. It just kept coming and coming. I jabbed his chest with my finger. I'm just another student to you. You just go on and on with your stupid life lessons so that... The hand I'd hoped would touch my hair suddenly reached out and grabbed my pointing hand. He pinned it to the wall, and I was surprised to see a flare of emotion in his eyes. It wasn't exactly anger, but it was frustration of another kind.
Don't tell me what I'm feeling, he growled.
I saw then that half of what I'd said was true. He was almost always calm, always in control, even when fighting. But he'd also told me how he'd once snapped and beaten up his Maroi father. He'd actually been like me once, always on the verge of acting without thinking, doing things he knew he shouldn't. That's it, isn't it? I asked.
What?
You're always fighting for control. You're the same as me.
No,
he said, still obviously worked up.
I've learned my control.
Something about this new realization emboldened me. No, I informed him. You haven't. You put on a good face, and most of the time you do stay in control. But sometimes you can't, and sometimes... I leaned forward, lowering my voice. Sometimes you don't want to.
Rose.
I could see his labored breathing and knew his heart was beating as quickly as mine. And he wasn't pulling away. I knew this was wrong, knew all the logical reasons for us staying apart. But right then, I didn't care. I didn't want to control myself. I didn't want to be good. Before he realized what was happening, I kissed him. Our lips met, and when I felt him kiss me back, I knew I was right. He pressed himself closer, trapping me between him and the wall. He kept holding my hand, but his other one snaked behind my head, sliding into my hair. The kiss was filled with so much intensity. It held anger, passion, release. He was the one who broke it. He jerked away from me and took several steps back, looking shaken.
Do not do that again, he said stiffly.
Don't kiss me back then, I retorted. He stared at me for what seemed like forever.
I don't give Zen lessons to hear myself talk. I don't give them because you're another student. I'm doing this to teach you control.
You're doing a great job, I said bitterly. He closed his eyes for half a second, exhaled, and muttered something in Russian. Without another glance at me, he turned and left the room. Chapter 9. I didn't see Dmitri for a while after that. He'd sent me a message later that day saying he thought we should cancel our next two sessions because of the rapidly approaching plans to leave campus. Classes were about to end anyway, he said. Taking a break from practice seemed like the reasonable thing. It was a lame excuse, and I knew that wasn't the reason he was canceling. If he wanted to avoid me, I would have preferred he made up something about how he and the other guardians had to up Moroi security or practice top-secret ninja moves. Regardless of his story, I knew he was avoiding me because of the kiss. That damned kiss. I didn't regret it. Not exactly. God only knew how much I'd been wanting to kiss him. But I'd done it for the wrong reasons. I'd done it because I was upset and frustrated and had simply wanted to prove that I could. I was so tired of doing the right thing, the smart thing. I was trying to be more in control lately, but I seemed to be slipping. I hadn't forgotten the warning that he'd once given me, that us being together wasn't just about age. It would interfere with our jobs. Pushing him into the kiss? Well, I'd fanned the flames of a problem that could eventually hurt Lissa. I shouldn't have done it. Yesterday, I'd been unable to stop myself. Today, I could see more clearly and couldn't believe what I'd done. Mason met me on Christmas morning, and we went to hang out with the others. It provided a good opportunity to push Dmitri out of my head. I liked Mason. A lot. And it wasn't like I had to run off and marry him. Like Lissa had said, it would be healthy for me to just date someone again. Tasha was hosting our Christmas brunch in an elegant parlor in the Academy's guest quarters. Lots of group activities and parties were occurring throughout the school, but I'd quickly noticed that Tasha's presence always created a disturbance. People either secretly stared or went out of their way to avoid her. Sometimes she would challenge them. Sometimes she would just lie low. Today, she'd chosen to stay out of the other royals' way and simply enjoy this small, private party of those who didn't shun her. Dmitri had been invited to the gathering, and a bit of my resolve faltered when I saw him. He'd actually dressed up for the occasion. Okay, dressed up might have been an exaggeration, but it was the closest I'd ever seen him come to that. Usually, he just looked a little rough, like he could spring into battle at any given moment. Today, his dark hair was tied at the back of his neck, as though he'd actually tried to make it neat. He wore his usual jeans and leather boots, but instead of a t-shirt or thermal shirt, he had on a finely knit black sweater. It was just an ordinary sweater, nothing designer or expensive, but it added a touch of polish I didn't usually see. And good God, did it fit him well. Dmitri wasn't mean to me or anything, but he certainly didn't go out of his way to make conversation with me. He did talk to Tasha, however, and I watched with fascination as they conversed in that easy way of theirs. I'd since learned that a good friend of his was a distant cousin of Tasha's family. That was how the two of them knew each other.
Five?
Asked Dmitri in surprise. They were discussing the friend's children.
I hadn't heard that.
Tasha nodded.
It's insane, I swear. I don't think his wife's had more than 6 months off between kids. She's short, too, so she just gets wider and wider.
When I first met him, he swore he didn't even want kids.
Her eyes widened excitedly.
I know, I can't believe it. You should see him now. He just melts around them. I can't even understand him half the time. I swear he speaks more baby talk than English.
Dmitri smiled his rare smile.
Well, children do that to people.
I can't imagine it happening to you, she laughed. You're always so stoic.
Of course. I suppose you'd be doing baby talk in Russian, so no one would ever know.
They both laughed at that, and I turned away, grateful Mason was there to talk to. He was a good distraction from everything, because in addition to Dmitri ignoring me, Lissa and Christian were chatting on in their own little world, too. Sex appeared to have made them much more in love, and I wondered if I'd get to spend any time with her at all on the ski trip. She did eventually break away from him to give me my Christmas present. I opened the box and stared inside. I saw a string of maroon-colored beads, and the scent of roses floated out. What the? I lifted the beads out, and a heavy gold crucifix swung from the end of them. She'd given me a tchotchke. It was similar to a rosary, only smaller, bracelet size. Are you trying to convert me? I asked wryly. Lissa wasn't a religious nut or anything, but she believed in God and attended church regularly. Like many Moroi families who'd come from Russia and Eastern Europe, she was an Orthodox Christian. Me? I was pretty much an Orthodox agnostic. I figured God probably existed, but I didn't have the time or energy to investigate. Lissa respected that and never tried to push her faith on me, which made the gift that much weirder. Flip it over, she said, clearly amused at my shock. I did. On the back of the cross, a dragon wreathed in flowers had been carved into the gold. The Dragomir crest. I looked up at her, puzzled. It's a family heirloom, she said. One of my dad's good friends has been saving boxes of his stuff. This was in it. It belonged to my great-grandmother's guardian. Liss, I said. The tchotchke took on a whole new meaning. I can't. You can't give me something like this. Well, I certainly can't keep it. It's meant for a guardian. My guardian. I wound the beads around one wrist. The cross felt cool against my skin. You know, I teased, there's a good possibility I'll get kicked out of school before I can become your guardian. She grinned. Well, then you can give it back. Everyone laughed. Tasha started to say something, then stopped when she looked up at the door. Janine! My mother stood there, looking as stiff and impassive as ever. Sorry I'm late, she said. I had business to take care of. Business, as always, even on Christmas. I felt my stomach turn and heat rise to my cheeks as the details of our fight came rushing back to my mind. She'd never sent one word of communication since it had happened 2 days ago, not even when I was in the infirmary. No apologies, nothing. I gritted my teeth. She sat down with us and soon joined the conversation. I'd long since discovered she could really only talk about one subject, guardian business. I wondered if she had any hobbies. The Badika attack was on everyone's mind, and this drove her into a conversation about some similar fight she'd been in. To my horror, Mason was riveted by her every word. Well, decapitations aren't as easy as they seem, she said in her matter-of-fact way. I'd never thought they were easy at all, but her tone suggested that she believed everyone thought they were cake. You've got to get through the spinal cord and tendons. Through the bond, I felt Lissa grow queasy. She wasn't one for gruesome talk. Mason's eyes lit up. What's the best weapon to do it with? My mother considered. An axe. You can get more weight behind it. She made a swinging motion by way of illustration. Cool, he said. Man, I hope they let me carry an axe. It was a comical and ludicrous idea, since axes were hardly convenient weapons to carry around. For half a second, the thought of Mason walking down the street with an axe over his shoulder lightened my mood a little. The moment quickly passed. I honestly couldn't believe we were having this conversation on Christmas. Her presence had soured everything. Fortunately, the gathering eventually dispersed. Christian and Lissa went off to do their own thing, and Dimitri and Tasha apparently had more catching up to do. Mason and I were well on our way to the Dampier dorm when my mother joined us. None of us said anything. Stars cluttered the black sky, sharp and bright. Their glitter matched in the ice and snow around us. I wore my ivory parka with fake fur trimming. It did a good job keeping my body warm, even though it did nothing against the chilly gusts that seared my face. The whole time we walked, I kept expecting my mother to turn off toward the other guardian areas, but she came right inside the dorm with us.
"I've been wanting to talk to you," she finally said.
My alarms clicked on. What had I done now? That was all she said, but Mason picked up on the hint immediately. He was neither stupid nor oblivious to social cues, though at that moment, I kind of wished he was. I also found it ironic that he wanted to fight every Strigoi in the world but was afraid of my mother. He glanced at me apologetically, shrugged, and said, "Hey, I've gotta get, somewhere. I'll see you later." I watched with regret as he left, wishing I could run after him. Probably my mom would only tackle me and punch my other eye if I tried to escape. Better to do things her way and get this over with. Shifting uncomfortably, I looked everywhere but at her and waited for her to speak. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed a few people glancing over at us. Recalling how everyone in the world seems to know about her giving me the black eye, I suddenly decided I didn't want witnesses around for whatever lecture she was about to unleash on me.
"You want to, go to my room?"
I asked. She looked surprised, almost uncertain.
"Sure."
I led her upstairs, keeping a safe distance away as we walked. Awkward tension built between us. She didn't say anything when we reached my room, but I saw her examine every detail carefully, as though a Strigoi might be lurking in there. I sat on the bed and waited while she paced, unsure what I should do. She ran her fingers over a stack of books on animal behavior and evolution.
"Are these for a report?" she asked.
"No, I'm just interested in it, that's all." Her eyebrows rose. She hadn't known that. But how would she? She didn't know anything about me. She continued her appraisal, stopping to study little things that apparently surprised her about me. A picture of Lissa and me dressed up like fairies for Halloween. A bag of sweet tarts. It was as though my mother were meeting me for the first time. Abruptly, she turned and extended her hand toward me.
"Here."
Startled, I leaned forward and held my palm out underneath hers. Something small and cool dropped into my hand. It was a round pendant, a small one, not much bigger than a dime in diameter. A base of silver held a flat disc of colored glass circles. Frowning, I ran my thumb over its surface. It was strange, but the circles almost made it look like an eye. The inner one was small, just like a pupil. It was so dark blue that it looked black. Surrounding it was a larger circle of pale blue, which was in turn surrounded by a circle of white. A very, very thin ring of that dark blue color circled the outside.
"Thanks," I said. I hadn't expected anything from her. The gift was weird. Why the hell would she give me an eye? But it was a gift. I didn't get you anything.
My mom nodded, face blank and unconcerned once more.
"It's fine. I don't need anything."
She turned away again and started walking around the room. She didn't have a lot of space to do it, but her shorter height gave her a smaller stride. Each time she passed in front of the window over my bed, the light would catch her auburn hair and light it up. I watched her curiously and realized she was as nervous as me. She halted in her pacing and glanced back toward me.
"How's your eye?"
"Getting better."
"Good."
She opened her mouth, and I had a feeling she was on the verge of apologizing, but she didn't. When she started pacing again, I decided I couldn't stand the inactivity. I began putting my presents away. I'd gotten a pretty nice haul of stuff this morning. One of them was a silk dress from Tasha, red and embroidered with flowers. My mother watched me hang it in the room's tiny closet.
"That was very nice of Tasha."
"Yeah," I agreed. "I didn't know she was going to get me anything. I really like her."
"Me too."
I turned from the closet in surprise and stared at my mom. Her astonishment mirrored mine. If I hadn't known any better, I'd have said we'd just agreed on something. Maybe Christmas miracles did happen.
"Guardian Belkov will be a good match for her."
"I I blinked, not entirely sure what she was talking about. Dmitri?
Guardian Belikov, she corrected sternly, still not approving of my casual way of addressing him.
What kind of match? I asked.
She raised an eyebrow. You haven't heard. She's asked him to be her guardian, since she doesn't have one.
I felt like I'd been punched again. But he's assigned here, and to Lyssa.
Arrangements can be made, and regardless of the Ozera reputation, she's still royal. If she pushes, she can get her way.
I stared bleakly into space. Well, I guess they are friends and everything.
More than that, or possibly could be.
Bam! Punched again. What?
Hmm? Oh, she's interested in him.
By my mother's tone, it was clear that romantic matters actually held no interest for her.
She's willing to have Dampier children, so it's possible they might eventually make an, arrangement, if he were her guardian.
Oh. My. God. Time froze. My heart stopped beating. I realized my mother was waiting for a response. She was leaning against my desk, watching me. She might be able to hunt down Strigoi, but she was oblivious to my feelings.
Is he going to do it? Be her guardian? I asked, weakly.
My mom shrugged. I don't think he's agreed to it yet, but of course he will. It's a great opportunity.
Of course, I echoed. Why would Dmitri turn down the chance to be a guardian to a friend of his and to have a baby? I think my mom said something else after that, but I didn't hear it. I didn't hear anything. I kept thinking about Dmitri leaving the academy, leaving me. I thought about the way he and Tasha had gotten along with each other so well. And then, after those recollections, my imagination started improvising future scenarios. Tasha and Dmitri together. Touching. Kissing. Naked. Other things. I squeezed my eyes shut for half a second and then opened them. I'm really tired. My mom stopped mid-sentence. I had no idea what she'd been saying before I interrupted her. I'm really tired, I repeated. I could hear the hollowness in my own voice. Empty. No emotion. Thanks for the eye, thing. But if you don't mind... My mother stared at me in surprise, her features open and confused. Then, just like that, her usual wall of cool professionalism slammed back into place. Until that moment, I hadn't realized how much she'd let it up. But she had. For just a brief time, she'd made herself vulnerable with me. That vulnerability was now gone.
Of course, she said stiffly. I don't want to bother you.
I wanted to tell her it wasn't that. I wanted to tell her I wasn't kicking her out for any personal reason. And I wanted to tell her that I wished she were the kind of loving, understanding mother you always hear about, one I could confide in, maybe even a mother I could discuss my troubled love life with. God, I wished I could tell anyone about that, actually, especially right now. But I was too caught up in my own personal drama to say a word. I felt like someone had ripped my heart out and tossed it across the other side of the room. There was a burning, agonizing pain in my chest, and I had no idea how it could ever be filled. It was one thing to accept that I couldn't have Dmitri. It was something entirely different to realize someone else could. I didn't say anything else to her because my speech capabilities no longer existed. Fury glinted in her eyes, and her lips flattened out into that tight expression of displeasure she so often wore. Without another word, she turned around and left, slamming the door behind her. That door slam was something I would have done too, actually. I guess we really did share some genes. But I forgot about her almost immediately. I just kept sitting there and thinking, thinking and imagining. I spent the rest of the day doing little more than that. I skipped dinner. I shed a few tears. But mostly, I just sat on my bed, thinking and growing more and more depressed. I also discovered that the only thing worse than imagining Dimitri and Tasha together was remembering when he and I had been together. He would never touch me again like that. Never kiss me again. This was the worst Christmas ever. Chapter 10. The ski trip couldn't have come a moment too soon. It was impossible to get the Dimitri and Tasha thing out of my head, but at least packing and getting ready made sure I didn't devote 100% of my brain power to him. More like 95%. I had other things to distract me, too. The Academy might, rightfully, be overprotective when it came to us, but sometimes that translated into pretty cool stuff. Example, the Academy had access to a couple of private jets. This meant no Strigoi could attack us at an airport, and it also meant we got to travel in style. Each jet was smaller than a commercial plane, but the seats were cushy and had lots of legroom. They extended far enough back that you could practically lie down to sleep. On long flights, we had little consoles in the seats that gave us TV movie options. Sometimes they'd even break out fancy meals. I was betting this flight, however, would be too short for any movies or substantial food. We left late on the 26th. When I boarded the jet, I looked around for Lissa, wanting to talk to her. We hadn't really spoken after the Christmas brunch. I wasn't surprised to see her sitting with Christian, and they didn't look like they wanted to be interrupted. I couldn't hear their conversation, but he'd put his arm around her and had that relaxed, flirty expression that only she could bring out. I remained fully convinced that he could never do as good a job as me of taking care of her, but he clearly made her happy. I put on a smile and nodded at them as I passed down the aisle toward where Mason was waving at me. As I did, I also walked by Dimitri and Tasha sitting together. I pointedly ignored them. "Hey," I said, sliding into the seat beside Mason. He smiled at me.
"Hey, you ready for the ski challenge?"
"As ready as I'll ever be." "Don't worry," he said.
"I'll go easy on you."
I scoffed and leaned my head back against the seat.
"You're so delusional." "Sane guys are boring."
To my surprise, he slid his hand over mine. His skin was warm, and I felt my own skin tingle where he touched me. It startled me. I'd convinced myself Dimitri was the only one I'd ever respond to again. "It's time to move on," I thought. "Dimitri obviously has. You should have done it a long time ago." I laced my fingers with Mason's, catching him off guard. "I do. This is going to be fun." And it was. I tried to keep reminding myself that we were here because of a tragedy, that there were Strigoi and humans out there who might strike again. No one else seemed to remember that, though, and I admit, I was having a difficult time myself. The resort was gorgeous. It was built to sort of look like a log cabin, but no pioneer cabin could have held hundreds of people or had such luxury accommodations. 3 stories of gleaming golden color wood sat among lofty pine trees. The windows were tall and gracefully arched, tinted for Moroi convenience. Crystal lanterns, electric but shaped to look like torches, hung around all the entrances, giving the entire building a glittering, almost bejeweled look. Mountains, which my enhanced eyes could just barely make out in the night, surrounded us, and I bet the view would have been breathtaking when it was light out. One side of the grounds led off to the skiing area, complete with steep hills and moguls, as well as lifts and tow ropes. Another side of the lodge had an ice rink, which delighted me since I'd missed out that one day by the cabin. Near that, smooth hills were reserved for sledding. And that was just the outside. Inside, all sorts of arrangements had been made to cater to Moroi needs. Feeders stayed on hand, ready to serve 24 hours a day. The slopes ran on a nocturnal schedule. Wards and guardians circled the entire place. Everything a living vampire could want. The main lobby had a cathedral ceiling and an enormous chandelier hanging over it. Its floor was intricately tiled marble, and the front desk stayed open around the clock, ready to indulge our every need. The rest of the lodge, hallways and lounges, had a red, black, and gold color scheme. The deep shade of red dominated over the other hues, and I wondered if its resemblance to blood was a coincidence. Mirrors and art adorned the walls, and little ornamental tables had been placed here and there. They held vases of pale green, purple-spotted orchids that filled the air with a spicy scent. The room I shared with Lissa was bigger than our dorm rooms put together and had the same rich colors as the rest of the lodge. The carpet was so plush and deep that I immediately shed my shoes at the door and walked in barefoot, luxuriating in the way my feet sank into that softness. We had king-size beds, covered in feather duvets, and set with so many pillows that I swore a person could get lost in them all and never be seen again. French doors opened onto a spacious balcony, which, considering we were on the top floor, would have been cool if not for the fact it was freezing outside. I suspected the two-person hot tub on the far end would go a long way to make up for the cold. Drowning in so much luxury, I reached an overload point where the rest of the accommodations started swimming together. The jetted marble bathtub, the plasma screen TV, the basket of chocolate and other snacks. When we finally decided to go skiing, I had to practically drag myself from the room. I could probably have spent the rest of my vacation lounging in there and been perfectly content. But we finally ventured outside, and once I managed to push Dimitri and my mother out of my head, I started to enjoy myself. It helped that the lodge was so enormous, there was little chance of running into them. For the first time in weeks, I was able to finally focus on Mason and realize just how much fun he was. I also got to hang out with Lissa more than I had in a while, which put me in an even better mood. With Lissa, Christian, Mason, and me, we were able to get a kind of double date thing going. The four of us spent almost all of the first day skiing, though the two Maroy had a bit of trouble keeping up. Considering what Mason and I went through in our classes, he and I weren't afraid to try daring stunts. Our competitive natures made us eager to go out of our way to outdo each other.
"You guys are suicidal," remarked Christian at one point.
It was dark outside, and tall light posts illuminated his bemused face. He and Lissa had been waiting at the bottom of the Mogul Hill, watching Mason and me come down. We'd been moving at insane speeds. The part of me that had been trying to learn control and wisdom from Dimitri knew it was dangerous, but the rest of me liked embracing that recklessness. That dark streak of rebelliousness still hadn't let me go. Mason grinned as we skidded to a halt, sending up a spray of snow.
"Nah, this is just a warm-up. I mean, Rose has been able to keep up with me the whole time. Kid stuff."
Lissa shook her head. "Aren't you guys taking this too far?" Mason and I looked at each other.
"No."
She shook her head. "Well, we are going inside. Try not to kill yourselves." She and Christian left, arm in arm. I watched them go, then turned back to Mason.
"I'm good for a while longer. You?"
"Absolutely."
We took a lift back up to the top of the hill. When we were just about to head down, Mason pointed.
"Okay,
how about this? Hit those moguls there, then jump over that ridge, swing back with a hairpin turn, dodge those trees, and land there." I followed his finger as he pointed out a jagged path down one of the biggest slopes. I frowned. "That one really is insane, Mace."
"Ah,"
he said triumphantly. "She finally cracks." I glowered.
"She does not."
After another survey of his crazy route, I conceded. "Okay, let's do it." He gestured.
"You first."
I took a deep breath and leapt off. My skis slid smoothly over the snow, and piercing wind blasted into my face. I made the first jump neatly and precisely, but as the next part of the course sped forward, I realized just how dangerous it really was. In that split second, I had a decision to make. If I didn't do it, I'd never hear the end of it from Mason, and I really wanted to show him up. If I did manage it, I could feel pretty secure about my awesomeness. But if I tried and messed up, I could break my neck. Somewhere in my head, a voice that sounded suspiciously like Dimitri's started talking about wise choices and learning when to show restraint. I decided to ignore that voice and went for it. This course was as hard as I'd feared, but I pulled it off flawlessly, one insane move after another. Snow flew up around me as I made each sharp, dangerous turn. When I safely reached bottom, I looked up and saw Mason gesturing wildly. I couldn't make out his expression or words, but I could imagine his cheers. I waved back and waited for him to follow suit. But he didn't. Because when Mason got halfway down, he wasn't able to pull off one of the jumps. His skis caught and his legs twisted. Down he went. I reached him at about the same time some of the resort staff did. To everyone's relief, Mason hadn't broken his neck or anything else. His ankle did appear to have a nasty sprain, however, which was probably going to limit his skiing for the rest of the trip. One of the instructors monitoring the slopes ran forward, fury all over her face. "What were you kids thinking?" she exclaimed. She turned on me. "I couldn't believe it when you did those stupid stunts." Her glare fixed on Mason next. "And then you had to go ahead and copy her." I wanted to argue that it had been all his idea, but blame didn't matter at this point. I was just glad he was all right. But as we all went inside, guilt began to gnaw at me. I had acted irresponsibly. What if he'd been seriously injured? Horrible visions danced through my mind. Mason with a broken leg. A broken neck. What had I been thinking? No one had made me do that course. Mason had suggested it, but I hadn't fought back. Goodness knew I probably could have. I might have had to endure some mockery, but Mason was crazy enough about me that feminine wiles probably would have stopped this madness. I'd gotten caught up in the excitement and the risk, much as I had in kissing Dimitri, not giving enough thought to the consequences because secretly, inside of me, that impulsive desire to be wild still lurked. Mason had it too, and his called to me. That mental Dimitri voice chastised me once more. After Mason was safely returned to the lodge and had ice on his ankle, I carried our equipment back outside toward the storage buildings. When I went back inside, I went through a different doorway than I normally used. This entrance was set behind a huge, open porch with an ornate wooden railing. The porch was built into the side of the mountain and had a breathtaking view of the other peaks and valleys around us, if you felt like standing around long enough in freezing temperatures to admire it, which most people didn't. I walked up the steps to the porch, stomping snow off my boots as I did. A thick scent, both spicy and sweet, hung in the air. Something about it felt familiar, but before I could identify it, a voice suddenly spoke to me out of the shadows. "Hey, little Dampier." Startled, I realized someone was indeed standing on the porch. A guy. A Maroi, leaned against the wall not far from the door. He brought a cigarette up to his mouth, took a long drag, and then dropped it on the floor. He stamped the butt out and crooked me a smile. That was the scent, I realized. Clove cigarettes. Warily, I stopped and crossed my arms as I took him in. He was a little shorter than Dimitri, but wasn't as lanky as some Maroi guys ended up looking. A long charcoal coat, probably made out of some insanely expensive cashmere wool blend, fit his body exceptionally well, and the leather dress shoes he wore indicated more money still. He had brown hair that looked like it had been purposely styled to appear a little unkempt, and his eyes were either blue or green. I didn't have quite enough light to know for sure. His face was cute, I supposed, and I pegged him to be a couple years older than me. He looked like he'd just come from a dinner party. "Yeah?" I asked. His eyes swept over my body. I was used to attention from Maroi guys. It just usually wasn't so obvious. And I usually wasn't bundled up in winter clothing and sporting a black eye. He shrugged. "Just saying hi, that's all." I waited for more, but all he did was stuff his hands into the coat's pockets. With a shrug of my own, I took a couple steps forward.
You smell good, you know,
he suddenly said. I stopped walking again and gave him a puzzled look, which only made his sly smile grow a little bigger.
What?
You smell good, he repeated.
Are you joking? I've been sweating all day. I'm disgusting.
I wanted to walk away, but there was something eerily compelling about this guy. Like a train wreck. I didn't find him attractive per se. I was just suddenly interested in talking to him.